Call to order the City Council meeting of July the 25th. I'll call for a moment of silence, please. If we stand for the Pledge of Allegiance.
Pledge of Allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic which stands one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Just a bit of housekeeping, if everyone would be kind enough to turn off any electronic devices they have, as that interferes with our sound system. Roll call, please.
Charlie Hawkins.
Here.
Dennis Olison.
Here.
Bonnie Onion.
Here.
Harry Robinson.
Here.
Mary Lou Stewart.
Here.
Paul Greeno.
Here.
Steve Lawrenson requested to be excused tonight.
I'll entertain a motion, please.
So moved.
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion is carried 6-0. Do we have any audience participation this evening? Oh, you gave it to me. Thank you very much. Renata Dick would like to speak on the train. Would you kind enough? Please state your name and address for the record, please.
My name is Renata Dick. My address is 2128 Dodd Avenue in Blaine. And I'd like to thank you for letting me come tonight so I can voice some concerns of mine. I have a major concern about the safety and welfare of my neighbors and our community that live on the other side of the railroad track on Hughes. This last month, we've had, that I know of, three times that the train has totally stopped. This last time was Sunday, and it was there for 3 hours. This is an inconvenience for people. They're late for jobs. They're late for appointments. I had a neighbor who was waiting. Her cousin was on the other side of the track, and she was supposed to go to an event, all dressed up, and 3 hours the train was there. I'm really concerned about medics being able to come in. About a year and a half ago, one of my neighbors had a heart attack, and the first thing the EMT said to him was, when was the last train here coming through? Since I've lived here and since they put the Bacchus in, our neighborhood has grown a lot. We now have a lot more families and a lot more children. I come to you tonight because I would like to have an update on any effort that has been made to remedy the situation that we have in our neighborhood. I know that when Gary was working as city manager, he had contact with Rick Larson, and Rick Larson never seemed to be able to get anything done. For those of you, I guess I need to preface that for those of you who aren't aware of where I live, the only way out, we live on Hughes Avenue, it's off of Hughes Avenue, and there was only one way in and one way out of our neighborhood. And after 9/11, the federal government installed the Bacchus unit, which is the X-ray unit for the trains that are going southbound. They didn't ask anybody in Blaine where to put this X-ray machine, so they plopped it where they thought that they should, and if it had been moved a half a mile down the road, we would have access to the to Peace Portal and be able to get out of our neighborhoods. So, like I said last Sunday, we were stuck. We were stranded in our neighborhood for 3 hours. There was no way anybody could get to us, and there was no way we could get out. I'm asking you tonight that if you know when Susan Del Vinay comes to this community. We would like to have a neighborhood meeting with her to see what can be done about the situation. I need to know, do I need to get petitions going and maybe get a hold of Patty Murray? I've thought about videotaping the intersection there and how long it takes for the train to pass, which is usually at least 12 minutes, and a lot of times it's more. If you have any suggestions on who else we can approach, I would really appreciate that. I'm not going to give up on this, and I'm not going to shut up. It's been a number of years that I've been living in this neighborhood, and we've had this problem. And it's probably my fault for not approaching the council sooner, but something needs to be done. Because if sooner or later someone's house is going to burn, someone's going to die. We've had the ambulance in our neighborhood several times. We have children that have asthma in our neighborhood, and this is not acceptable. I think we would prefer that the Backus be moved, but if the Backus cannot be moved, we need to know that there is a way that medics can come into our neighborhood if need be, and if we need to get out, we need another way out. The emergency services are a must. And I would like to know that what I'm saying here tonight isn't falling on deaf ears. We need to know that something can be done, whether it's by the council or it's by the council giving me instructions on what my neighborhood can do. But this is not acceptable, and it can't go on any longer. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Renata. I don't know, David, if you'd like to respond to that, or what I would suggest if we don't want to respond this evening, that we have a meeting, study session, to determine what we as a city can do. I think a lot of times that the local citizens are going to have to get ahead of this.
Well, we certainly could do a study session in response a little bit to Renata's comments. Yeah. We have actually met with Del Benny. I got an email from her aide recently discussing it. I sent a pretty terse email back saying that they needed to step up to the plate and help with the problem. I think the expectation is somehow the city's going to call a meeting and people are going to come to the meeting and there's going to be an action. And I think that's not correct because you had many meetings. I think Gary, before me, talked to many people as well. I would say that on the crossing, there's a 1-800 number, and we can call that number. Apparently that number is, you can tell them what crossing you're at, and then they have the ability to notify a conductor. You know, all of the trains are managed through a Texas headquarters. Every train in the track, every car on the system is monitored, so they know where the trains are sitting. And so one solution could possibly be to have, when that train crosses, for someone to call 911 and for the police department to call the 800 number, which then puts it on a different status than if a citizen calls or somebody that doesn't have any authority calls. So we can look into those kinds of options. But I think, frankly, I've kind of mentioned this a couple of times, I think it's a grassroots effort, almost to the point where you need to start getting local and national media attention for it before something happens, for the reasons that Renata brought up and many others. You know, the other thing about 911 or the fire department aid car, it could get stuck on the other side of the track, on the neighborhood side, and sit there for 3 hours and not be available for calls other places. So it kind of goes both ways. But I think, frankly, it's going to take a very specific, strategic initiative to get all the people interested or uninterested in it, including our local politicians in Bellingham, the county executive's office, you know, getting behind the same initiative. So I think, you know, talking to a local or a federal representative is not going to help it. We need to get more active than that.
Go ahead,
Renata.
Even if you have another exit, you're still on the other side of the track, aren't you?
If the road was open from Dodd Avenue down to Rungi, we would have access to Bell Road there, or to, what's the road before? Blaine Road, I mean. We would have access. If the Blaine Fire Department or police EMTs couldn't get to us over Hughes, through Hughes, then they could, you could get maybe Birch Bay or someone to come. And then if the road was open from Rungi to Dodd, then that would help. I mean, like I said, the last two times I think that the train was stuck this last time was due to malfunction of the train. It had nothing to do with the Bacchus. Mm-hmm. And somehow they were able to unlink cars so that people could get across Bell Road, but we weren't. That didn't happen on Hughes. So if that road would be open, then that would be a way for us to get out or somebody to come in. I've often wondered if you had a test run when the train was stopped in front of Hughes, if somebody called 911 and just see how long it would take somebody to get to us.
Mr. Mayor, if I may, just wanted to point out that we did work with the housing authority that purchased the property and is developing another phase, and we acquired an easement so that there is a rough access road now that connects to Rungi for emergency vehicles. It is not yet open to the public, but if there was an emergency, there would be a way for an emergency vehicle.
Have you seen that road? I mean, it's nothing but rocks.
Right.
You know.
Unfortunately, until that phase of the development is built, it's strictly
okay,
an emergency.
Okay, and we're talking how much time then? That's not acceptable. It's just not acceptable to me. Mm-hmm. There's too many people in that neighborhood, and we just can't afford to go that long before we can get out or in my neighborhood.
We met with Del Benny and Michael. How long was that meeting?
About a month ago.
The meeting was about a half an hour. Most of it was related to this exact topic.
We spoke on a half an hour on this to her, and I don't know if she's going to be able to do something or not. Chief Hasselton is in the back, and he knows that he and I were at a meeting. We had quite a conversation with Kenneth Williams, who is with the U.S. Department of Homeland Security. And again, we made him completely aware of the problem. He understands the problem. He is attempting to work on some means of reducing the amount of traffic. Like, for example, whole trains coming out of Canada that are empty, they're not going to stop them at the Bascas. They're going to let them run right through. But that doesn't stop. I know the problem you're talking about. I've worn out my welcome with many people on this subject because I keep hammering away at it. I know exactly what the problem is. We've spent a lot of time with Doug Erickson, all the other representatives here. We spent time with them. They all understand the problem. It's just a question of whether, the way it was presented to me, it's a budget problem. And it's a budget problem in the sense that Homeland Security would have to include in their budget an amount of money to remove or change the direction of the basket machine. And Susan DelBene can't put it in her budget because it's not up to her to move the machine. It's up to Homeland Security. So I would advocate to everybody, if you get stuck at the train and you've got a cell phone with you, call Patty Murray, call Cantwell, call Del Benny, and just every time. If You get all your neighbors and all your friends. They're sitting there waiting half an hour for the train. Pick up your phone, get their numbers, and call them and tell them, look, I am sick and tired of sitting at this train. Or if you know the train's blocking you in your area, pick up the phone and call them. Call all three of them and tell them, look, I've got no access to either the fire department or the police department. My neighborhood is stuck. And this is a major issue. I think we're right. This has got to be a grassroots. We've got to get everybody in this town working on this problem. Because the city council can only do what we can do. But I think we need to have them be aware that this is really resonating with everybody in the community.
I'd like to if something is being done, would you please notify us if you have had conversations with people or whatever, so we know that this isn't just going to stop when I leave here tonight. The first meeting that I went to when the Bacchus was set up, I asked the question, when somebody loses their lives in my neighborhood, who gets sued? Is it the city? Is it the county? Or is it the federal government? Because that will happen. And somebody's going to have to take responsibility.
It's going to happen in Semiahmoo as well. Because, you know, I give the story of what happened to my wife. She fell down a flight of stairs. She had that. The local people came. They couldn't move her without drugs. So they called Bellingham. Bellingham sent their unit up. They got stuck at the train for half an hour. So, you know what's going to happen in Semiahmoo. Someone's going to have a heart attack. The same thing's going to happen. Because it takes them a long time to uncouple that train on Bell Road. And we know this. We've explained this to all these people. They just don't seem to grasp how significant the problem is. Someone's going to die as a result of this. And Kenneth Williams said, look at what, if you call 911 locally, they have, they have access to when the trains are coming. Just because the 911 is at customs. They know they have access to when the trains are coming. The problem is, if you need a unit to come out of Bellingham, they don't know. And I said to him, can you set up a procedure that when the unit comes out of Bellingham, they call you to find out if they're going to have trouble with the train? And he said, well, he'd look into it. So I just don't know. But they're very much aware of it. It's just a question to me. Of all the conversations I've had, it really boils down to who's going to put it in their budget. And it's the only place it can go is Homeland Security. And so how we convince Homeland Security to do something, will require us to get hold of all of, like Murray and Cantwell are significant players in Washington. And so we've got to find a way to make them aware of the problem.
Well,
call them every time you have a problem. Pick up the phone and call Cantwell, call Murray, and say, look, here, I'm stuck in a problem, or I've got no access to either fire or police. What can you do about it? And just make sure that tell all of your neighbors to do exactly the same thing.
Okay. Thanks for your time.
Okay. Any written communications?
No written communications.
Okay, we have a consent agenda, approval of bills in the amount of $175,862.30, and approval of council minutes for July the 11th, 2016.
So moved.
Second.
Motion has been made and seconded. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Say nay. Any motion is carried 6-0. Next item on the agenda is council action items. The first one is a resolution 1688-16, the 2016 comprehensive plan mid-year docket. Mr. Jones, are you going to explain that one to us?
Yes. This is an opportunity for the council to authorize an additional comprehensive plan amendment to begin processing during the 2016 calendar year. As you know, comprehensive plan amendments need to be initiated by council, and after initiation, they're processed by staff, the Planning Commission, and then they return to council for consideration. But council has the opportunity with comprehensive plan amendments to do something that rarely do we have the opportunity to do, and that is to just right at the beginning say no thank you and not consider something. That's done to, I think, save time more than anything, but also to keep the long-range planning on track. The only item that we have docketed at this time is an update of the Resort Semiahmoo Master Plan that essentially includes a modernization of the plan and taking into account the development that has occurred to date, particularly in the uplands, because it's been updated for the Spit in the lowland area and hasn't been updated for the area up on the plateau. So that is in process. That's the only comprehensive plan amendment that we're working on. And this is a proposal to add another one. And this would be a change to the Wharf District Master Plan. And the Wharf District is that area on the other side of the railroad tracks down by Marine Drive. So it includes Marine Park, where the wastewater treatment plant is located, as well as all the land on the south side of Marine Drive, which is owned by the Port of Bellingham. It includes the boat launch, parking, industrial and commercial areas, the harbor and such. And that plan was adopted in 2007, about a decade ago now, and developed in the year or so prior to that. And that laid out sub-planning areas within the Wharf District, some which were for more commercial-oriented activity, some which were more towards more industrial activity, and others that were more recreation-oriented, like the marina and Marine Park, for example. This particular section that the Port of Bellingham has applied to initiate an amendment on is the area that's, for the most part, encompassed by the boat launch parking area and some of the adjacent lands. And that area was designated as mixed use in the plan with the hope at that time, and if you remember back 2004, 5, 6, 7, we were in the middle of the housing boom, development was going like crazy, it was pre-recession, and there was a proposal at that time with this plan to make that mixed use for commercial tourist commercial and potentially residential uses. So you might see a hotel, apartments, shops and restaurants, offices, that kind of thing in that area. Kind of a complement to downtown. And in the intervening 10 years, the Port of Bellingham has pursued a request for proposals and received one proposal that was, I don't think, as strong as they had hoped, and no others. And they since then have really not had interest in that property coming forward with that kind of development. And I don't mean the port's not interested, but no one's expressed an interest to them in developing it. They would like to open their opportunities and make it more of a possibility that they could develop more marine trades in that area and other things that support shipping and marine industries. So currently I know that they're in discussions with a developer that would do dry storage of boats. So boats would be taken out of the water and put into warehousing. It's actually a stacked storage kind of scenario. So like it's forklifted up and a boat is placed on a shelf, if you will, giant shelving system for small boats. That would be a significant investment, but that would obviously not be tourist commercial. It wouldn't be a hotel or shops and restaurants. It would be a different kind of use. That's not necessarily what this change would cause to happen, but that this change would allow that kind of use to happen. So the proposal here from the port, as it's laid out, and I gave you the application with the red line changes, this wouldn't be the exact language that comes forward to you. I'm sure this wouldn't be the final version because it would go through a review at staff level and then at Planning Commission with public comment. But it gives you the sense of what they're looking at. And it is, as I described, an opportunity to open up that use for other things. It doesn't preclude someone from coming in and building a hotel or coming in and building condos or that sort of thing, but it would allow other uses as well. Any questions on the process or any more questions on the proposal? I'm happy to answer those.
Dennis. Michael, on that figure 25, the one that shows the heights.
Yes.
You're dropping the height in 3E from 55 to 45 in the same way over on...
In no instance are they proposing to reduce the height.
Well, it shows it in red.
Red was the red is the original font from the plan, and okay. They're crossing out the red. That just happens to be what color it was put in the original plan. So unlike the rest of the document where the red is the additions, in here the red just happens to be how it was originally formatted. So in three areas they're proposing a potential height increase of 10 feet from 35 to 45 in two areas and from 45 to 55 in another. But again, this is just allowing us to consider it. This isn't a vote to approve that.
Is there any question that that would affect the view from Peace Portal?
That analysis has not been done.
Because that's set at what, 30, 35 on the west side?
36 feet on the west side of East Portal Drive.
And so if you went up to 55, that seems like a blockage. That was my concern.
It's a valid concern, but again, no analysis has been done, so I wouldn't want to comment on whether it is or isn't and the differential in the grade.
I share Dennis's concern, and I understand that no analysis has been made. But I see this as a case of perhaps the camel getting its nose in the tent and approving this now and saying, well, we'll deal with it later. And then later saying, well, you approved this. We've got to go ahead with it. So my inclination would be to defer discussion of this proposal further until we had some analysis of the effects upon Peace Portal and the city of Blaine proper.
I can see that perspective, sir. I guess I would just review the process a little bit. Is if you don't docket this, if the council doesn't vote, for four of you voting to docket this, then we don't do analysis and you won't find that information. It basically, that is a vote to tell us not to work on it. The court, I suppose, would have the option of bringing forward an analysis as part of a revised application, but this just dies for this year. And they can come back next year with a greater analysis. Again, if you say yes, then we tell them you can supplement your application. We'll write a staff report. It goes to the Planning Commission for a public hearing, and then those kinds of things would come forward. But I see your perspective. But bear in mind, it's not a vote of approval. It's a vote of we'll think about it.
Understood. One other question, Harry. Go ahead, Dennis. Who does the analysis as to whether that affects the heights will affect?
We would request the applicant to submit that, and we will review it and potentially do some additional analysis of our own.
Okay. Yes, Bonnie.
These areas of development, planning areas, those are Port of Bellingham's planning areas, correct?
I'm sorry?
Are these planning areas City of Blaine's planning areas or the Port of Bellingham's planning areas, 1, 2, and 3?
The land is physically owned by the Port of Bellingham. But
right.
The,
so it's their... So
it's our plan. It's also their plan. They've adopted
okay.
it as well.
Okay.
So, you know, it's our law, but it is physically their property.
Okay. I have a concern about including all of planning area 3
in the consideration of allowing marine services and boat storage, etc. I'm not against it so much on the east side of Mill Holland, but on the west side of Mill Holland, I have a problem with it. I know there's web lockers there right now, but it seems to me those should be two separate planning areas, possibly. There is a boat services already on the east side of Mill Holland that I really wouldn't have much of a problem with them staying there and extending and adding on. But on the west side, I do have a problem with making that change. So I just wanted to bring that up now.
And that's the kind of thing that we can review, and the proposal may come forward with splitting the area down into sub-areas
or something like that.
I think what we have to recognize is that there's a likelihood that this will be more marine-related. The entire area will end up being more marine-related than retail or, what was the other word, commercial.
Mm-hmm.
I just think that's something we have to accept.
Like that may occur regardless, so to speak, or nothing will happen if you don't allow it.
It's either going to be that or nothing.
That is a possibility, and at least for the last 10 years, that has kind of been the status.
So I don't know if we want to hold forth the belief that at some time in the future, somebody's going to want to build a commercial or real estate, retail service. I guess I have difficulty in holding up court's opportunity to develop that property by telling them that they have to hold it for commercial and real retail services, which may never come.
I think Mr. Hawkins has a question, Mr. Mayor.
Yeah, sort of the same idea. Getting the cart before the horse here. It seems like we need the discussion, and the only way we're going to have the discussion is if we pass this and put it on, get the process going. So I think we should pass this, and then when it gets around it, then we can discuss the changes we think they should make, or if not.
I think the staff recognizes that if we pass this, that there's going to be considerable concern about increases in the heights. And we hope that, or I anticipate that that would be discussed both at the staff and at the planning.
Mm-hmm.
And there would be hearings on that. So,
you know
that right off the bat that we're going to be zeroing in on that and want a study to determine that it's not going to block the views of people who live on this portal area.
Yeah, the two notes that I have basically, sir, are one, the consideration of heights and that, and analysis of heights, and then also looking at the possibly breaking down the sub area and not necessarily expanding that use. I would also mention, I'm afraid to get the cart before the horse, as Mr. Hawkins made the statement, but the proponents or the potential clients of the port who are interested in leasing the property and doing development in that area are here tonight if you have questions about their specific proposal. But again, I would remind you, this is first of all, not a public hearing. And it is not, this is not an application to develop the property. This is just to consider the possibility of the use in the future. Yeah. But if you have specific questions, even maybe afterwards, you might want to ask them.
Harry, I move we adopt resolution number 1688-16.
Second.
Okay, there's a motion on the table to approve resolution number 1688-16, initiating an additional comprehensive plan amendment by inclusion in the City of Blaine 2016 comprehensive plan docket. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed say nay. Hearing none, the motion is carried 6-0. The next item on our agenda is the resolution 1689-16, the hazard mitigation plan. going to do that one?
I've been nominated.
You've been nominated. Okay.
So what you have before you is a resolution 1689-16, which is to approve the updated hazard mitigation plan. The Federal Disaster Mitigation Act of 2000 requires the state and local governments develop hazard mitigation plans as a condition to receive federal grants. The last time the City of Blaine approved the hazard mitigation plan was in October of 2011. And what you have before you, and I added on in front of your chairs, this is in addition to the draft, which is the planning process. And so Whatcom County has received this, provided the planning process, and reviewed what the city provided to them. And it's now considered revised as of July 22nd of this year. And so the staff recommends that the City Council adopt Resolution 1689-16, adopting the Whatcom County Multi-Jurisdictional Hazard Mitigation Plan update. Are there any questions?
Dennis, based on Renata's concern, is there a way that that can be considered a hazard in a sense we don't have access when we need it across that railroad track?
Can we actually ask Chief Haslip? Has that ever been discussed before in any of the planning?
It's certainly an item that we can look to add to the next update. This is going to be updated annually from going forward, Your Honor. For our current emergency preparedness and response, we do have a plan in place for emergency response to that neighborhood, working through Raven's office, working with our fire district, that the access road off of Rungi Avenue is accessible to police vehicles and emergency equipment. I drove it today as an example. So we do have emergency responses worked out. We have emergency communications protocols in place with both the fire service, our office, and Burlington Northern. I have a channel on my radio for Burlington Northern, for instance. So we have those backgrounds. In terms of doing an update to this plan to specifically include that area, I think that'd be totally doable and probably a good idea. You know, or although we do have a back way into Dodd Avenue, for instance, we have no back way to Marine Drive. We have hundreds of millions of dollars of real estate and buildings in that port area, in addition to our own wastewater treatment plant. There's only one way into that once you get a boat. So I think those are good ideas for the next update, sir.
Will that put in a ferry? Is that what you're saying?
Well, there is the plover. So.
Thanks, Mike. But just responding to Chief Haslip's comments, there are certain areas of the city that I think if there was a national disaster, particularly an earthquake, and I-5 were to be closed to us, there's no way anyone from Semiamo would be able to get to a hospital, and there would be no way a hospital either from Canada or from Bellingham would be able to reach people in the Semiamo area. And I don't know if that's been highlighted in this, but we only have one hospital. If I-5 goes out, there's no way we're going to get to that hospital.
That is correct. And we do have plans, and we work with our partners to the north to use hospital facilities up north. But part of our own local plan is our own medical resources, because if the event is large enough, we will not have access to hospitals down south. And even if we had access to them, they would be overwhelmed.
Yeah, I know. So, I mean, I think that sort of needs to be highlighted. people in the northern end of the county are going to not have access to hospital. And if something were to happen that the highway north of here went down and there was no access to either of them north of the south, we would be stuck. We'd have to helicopter doctors into the area.
Right. Isn't Portal Way, the old Highway 99, isn't that an alternate route south?
It is until you get to the Nooksack River Bridge. You've got to get across those areas.
Well, that's true.
Unfortunately, most of our infrastructure in Whatcom County is resilient enough, and the earthquake potential is low enough for our specific geographic area that the probabilities are low that we'll have that sort of impact. However, there are a lot of scenarios you can build fairly rapidly which overwhelm our medical capacity in Whatcom County, and that's just the nature of the beast, and given our current commercial slash medical climate.
We discussed this at our Map Your Neighborhood meeting, just the vulnerability of the spit, that if a tsunami or some fire disaster were to occur along the spit with that narrow road, the people that are staying in the resort or in the new developments there, Marin and Semiahmoo Shores, would have no way of getting out other than by boat.
Correct.
I just think we've got to highlight that this in this area that we've got some unusual conditions that would be really affected by, say, an earthquake. I mean, all you got to do is go take a look at those videos of what happened in Northridge, California, and you know that it didn't take very long for the highways to be closed.
I agree, Your Honor. Thank you.
So staff recommends that the City Council adopt Resolution 1689-16, adopting the Whatcom County Multi-Jurisdictional Hazard Mitigation Plan Update.
So moved.
Second.
Motion has been made and seconded. Any questions or comments? Go ahead, Dennis.
The report, this plan is to be updated annually, is that correct?
That is the plan, sir.
Okay.
Question, Paul. I looked at the steps on the plan, and there are a number of items that are associated with the City of Blaine, and they're considered short-term. If we were to approve this plan tonight, is that equivalent to saying the City is committed to doing all of these things?
The City is aware of all of these things, and we have to identify what hazards need to be mitigated, and we need to have a process of continual improvement for them.
So these items will come back from time to time in search
exactly.
of...
Exactly, and that's part of the having an annual review as opposed to a five-year review.
Okay, thank you.
Hey, Dennis?
And Michael, or Mike, in order to get the federal grant assistance, we have to pass it.
Not trying to hold you hostage, but that's the bottom line.
Okay. Just so I know.
Okay. Okay. We have a motion on the table. Willing to entertain a motion if anyone's willing to make one.
You got one.
I got one. Okay, we'll call for the vote. Okay. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed say nay. Motion is carried 6-0. Okay, we're running out of things to do here. Okay.
Yeah.
Next item on the agenda is our commission, committee, and board reports.
Well,
First item is going to be the Blaine Chamber of Commerce. Bonnie?
No report this time.
WTA Board, Paul?
No report.
Charlie, Drayton Harbor Shellfish?
No report.
Dennis, the Library Senior Center and Boys and Girls Club?
The Library, they met last Wednesday, and they're interested in getting the survey going. And they're looking at having someone start a communications with the old guys in town, a history type thing. And they have a lady that is in the process of getting some training, and it'll be interesting. They're talking about video, audio, so that there'll be information gotten from these folks. The senior center, they painted the building this last week and weekend. Outside. It was done completely. The Friday of this week is Dana's retirement party plan, and there's lunch, and then she'll be there from 1 to 4, talk with people. And they held interviews for her position. They met with 4 different individuals. They have selected one. Things are not quite in place yet, but it looks like it's going to be a go. So we should have somebody on board pretty soon. And they were hoping so that this person would be able to have a chance to meet with Dana and go over different things. Boys and Girls Club, they've got activities going on during the day. I think they're open from 11:30 to 4, I think is what I read on the sign.
How's the pavilion doing?
It's in use all the time. If you want to go Zumba, I think they have
Zumba there
every day.
Okay, Raven. Public Works Advisory Committee.
Our next meeting is Thursday, August 4th, and we have a special guest coming to speak to the committee about the strategic plan.
What date is that?
August 4th, sir, at 10 a.m.
Small Cities Caucus. David, did you? I guess the jail is still on.
Discussion.
So I could leave it to you to report. I think you were there and have an opinion about it.
It's an ongoing issue, and there's some discussion about what goes on the agenda, I guess. And there's some decision, you know, there's obviously some lack of control, I guess, on some of the items that come up.
Yeah, my sense is the county executive and the mayor of Willingham are at odds. The city and the county are at odds with the jail, and the caucus seems to be kind of a landing zone where they get together, and at least that we're seeing it. And there's not much progress. You read in the paper this weekend that the sheriff's office is continuing to put pressure on keeping the population count down. The city of Bellingham didn't agree to the same agreement that the small cities agreed to, so there's a different strategy with that city than small cities. So from our perspective, you know, we're operating as we always have. The sheriff's office is maintaining jail standards. We're included in decisions as they apply to us, and I haven't had any comments from the police department or from the sheriff regarding our status or any other small cities' concerns. It's really a debate between the city of Bellingham and the county. I would say that there was a discussion about the EMS program coming up. There's a vote. The fire chief, I think, from Bellingham made the presentation on behalf of the committee that did the work to put the vote out to the county. The county council approved that to be voted on in this upcoming election, so you're going to see a lot more information that's going to be coming forward. It's going to be, you know, obviously a community-based, citizen-based initiative once the county council approves it. But there's a conversation about kind of the priorities within the community. Was the jail more or less a priority than the EMS? And I think the EMS was able to get out in front because they've got a cohesive plan. They got everybody to agree to the plan, all small cities as well as the county and the city of Bellingham. So that initiative is moving forward, which puts the jail kind of in the back burner. And it's going to be interesting to see how that manifests itself in terms of, they're all important priorities, but you know, the longer the county defers the jail conversation, or the community, as I can't just blame it on the county, the more cost it expensive it becomes, and the more difficult it will be to pass. So, and I think that was all of the Tuesday meeting, those two subjects primarily.
Yeah, and I think the county executive is having some difficulty with his counsel, and that he's would love like to see the jail go before the EMS.
I think so too.
Get voted down. So, yeah. EMS, and then we'll have to see what happens after that.
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay. Whatcom Council of Governments, really no report at this time. North Whatcom Fire Update, Chief Olander.
Evening, Council. Sharing with you our June statistics from our Chief's report. You can see we responded to 351 calls for the month. We did have zero fire loss for the month, so that was kind of refreshing. For Blaine, there were 87 calls, and for Semiahmoo, there were 8 calls. And the response times were there. A couple of calls of interest. You know, once or twice a year, we get to help deliver babies. It's kind of an exciting part of our job. We actually had 2 in 1 month. So that was kind of unusual, where our crews assisted, and both the babies were doing well. In my haste of printing this out, I gave you 2 pages to take lots of notes tonight. I apologize for that. It was kind of a busy day. The weather changed, as you noticed today, and we had 3 large grass fires, one right on the freeway today in the medium. So I was a little late getting this out. And because of that, the county is going to have a countywide burn ban starting tomorrow at 8 o'clock. That's been posted on our Twitter site, on our Facebook site, and it's on our website. And with that, I'll answer any questions you might have. Nothing too.
Is the burning ban for open fires or fires in fire pits?
Recreational fires are still allowed.
Recreational fires, which, can you define that?
It's for the purpose of the fire. If you're recreating around the fire, it's a recreational fire. If you're burning debris, it's a non-recreational
fire. So if it's 10 feet wide and 15 feet
No,
tall?
It's 3 by 3. Is
okay,
the
there's actually a size on it. Okay. Just checking.
Is that only county?
Pardon me?
Is that only county?
The county, well, you already can't burn in the UGAs or city limits, so the county has adopted that. Yeah, it's primarily for the areas that can still burn.
Chief, what caused that fire on close to the highway, the grass fire?
You know, we weren't able to determine. Oftentimes it's a brake shoe that falls off of a truck. That's not uncommon for a fire.
I was right there when it sort of started and cars were pulling off the road.
Mm-hmm. And, yeah, it took off really, really quickly,
yeah,
a lot faster than we thought.
It was really,
very
quickly.
Yeah,
I wondered if somebody had thrown a cigarette out or something.
There's a lot of debris in what's left over, yeah. And we had one off of Selder Road on the other side of Semiahmoo this afternoon, too.
It went really fast.
Yeah. They do that, especially when the fuels are dry, which they are now. Okay.
Okay. Next item is department reports. First item on the agenda is Public Works, A, project updates.
Start at 6.
Mm-hmm. All right, so a fairly short report for me tonight. Mitchell Road's going well. We're still hopeful that the bridge will be opened ahead of schedule. They're pouring retaining walls and sidewalk and such this week, and the weather is good, so hopefully we'll be paving the road soon. It looks really good. I also wanted to comment on the work at the Senior Center. It was a great opportunity for Public Works crews to kind of highlight and work with volunteers, and I know they enjoyed the day very much, and the finished product is much improved. So I think this is great that we're seeing the surge of volunteer efforts in our city. Couple of things going on. First, I'm going to be attending the National American Public Works Conference. They're now calling it PWX. Very fancy. It's in Minneapolis this year, and they're offering, and I don't know if it's because I'm on a committee or if they're just doing that, but in any event, they're offering a free space in the conference for elected officials. The conference is from August 28th to 31st. The value of the conference is about $830, I believe, so it's not an insignificant thing. So if any of you are interested, hopefully don't all shout at once because then we'll have to do a lottery, but if you're interested in joining me to go to Minneapolis at the end of August, you might be privileged to see me test for my Public Works Executive credential. So I'm going to be doing a presentation on that one morning. So anyway, please let me know. It's a really great opportunity to see what Public Works is about in a very big way. It's very impressive. And then finally, speaking of impressive, Public Works will be doing a Public Works rodeo downtown Blaine on Friday, August 19th. We're working on our ad with the Northern Light right now, where our crews are going to be able to demonstrate equipment, have kids take pictures on trucks and things like that, hoping to have a little fun as well as a little education about what Public Works is and how it fits into our lives. So hope you'll join us there.
Okay. Thank you, Raven. Question for Raven, Charlie?
I have a question, a couple questions. What's the policy about people that want to hook back into the power grid? If they have put on, so they can...
Solar panels.
Do we have a policy in place for whether we accept that? Or
we have a program called Smart Metering, where we put in essentially a double meter that measures the power that's being generated as well as the power that's consumed. We have not had a really successful demonstration of it working and actually really paying off, unfortunately, but it's also... It depends on the scale and the location and all of that, but certainly if you have a constituent that's interested in that, please send them to Public Works and we'll provide them more information.
Okay, and Ray was here. He wanted to ask about a crosswalk on Adelia Street, but he can't talk because he missed it, but I'm asking for you about the chance of a crosswalk up on Adelia and Mitchell.
I know that's something that our assistant public works director has spent some time on, and I do not know. I believe that we put some counters out there in the last month, I'm guessing, and I don't know what the results of that are. I'm happy to take your information and get back to you, however.
Raven,
thank you.
The house on Adelia that has the solar panels, is that being monitored, or is any information coming from that?
I am not aware of the house on Adelia. That could be one of the two locations that I know that we have in the city. I can find out and let you know at our next meeting.
Yeah, I talked to the owner, and he's all hooked up, and I haven't heard anything as to how that's working, whether it makes sense or not.
Was it fairly recently hooked up?
Within the last year.
Okay. I bet you I know who...
It's Juan, and I don't remember his last name.
Okay.
I thought I was doing pretty good with the first name.
I'll look into that and get back to you at our next meeting. If that works for you?
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Raven. Finance. Financial report and the 2016 mid-year budget report.
Okay, so I'm going to present on the 2016 second quarter financial report and then introduce the recommendation for the mid-year budget adjustment. So there's no action required tonight. Staff will bring the budget amendment to the council at the next meeting. What happened to the screen? It was on and then it's off. Well, as we're getting that figured out. So you have the report in your packet. Beginning with the general fund, operating revenues are at 48.9% of the budget, and operating expenditures are 46.6%. So revenues are about 1% below the forecast, and this is primarily due to the lower sales tax revenue that we're seeing. And it's about 5% below the estimate that we put in the budget. And as I mentioned, the general fund expenditures are below budget by about 3.4%, and this is due to certain underspent line items. So our general fund operating balance, we have a policy of maintaining 30 days worth of expenditures in the general fund, and that is currently above the target. And we ended 2015 with a higher fund balance. So at the end of the report, I will have some recommendations on what to do with that excess fund balance. So going back to the sales tax revenue, there's been definitely been a net effect on retail sales tax from the Canadian dollar exchange rate. We're definitely seeing that. However, if you do a year-over-year comparison, sales tax revenue is 2% higher. And the reason for that year-over-year increase is due to the school project. You know, the school is embarking on their construction project, and we're going to see some sales tax revenue from that over the four-year period of their project. But keep in mind, that's one-time revenue that we'll be seeing. But as I said, that will continue at least through the end of the school construction project. So overall, I would say the general fund is still looking pretty healthy. The street fund, now, there the actual operating revenues are at or above forecast, except for the penny per gallon gas tax. This revenue, as we've seen last year, is trending below expectations, and it's trending below prior year actuals as well. And I anticipate that will continue, but hopefully it'll level off and plateau, so we won't continue to see those decreases. And the actual operating expenditures are 46% of the budget. So the good news is that the current fund balance in the street fund is above the target. But I think this is what we're seeing with the penny per gallon gas tax, is that it's indicative of we need to find alternative financing sources. We're going to have to evaluate those to ensure the long-term health of the street fund. So then turning to the utilities, in the electric fund, revenue from sales is at 52% of the forecast, and operating expenditures are 50% of the budget. So this leaves an operating balance above the policy target of 60 days of expenses. in our water fund. Currently, the operating revenue is 43% of the budget if you're just doing a cumulative comparison. But there, we know that there is seasonality in the water revenue collections, so I anticipate that revenue will meet or exceed the estimates by the end of the summer. And on the expenditure side, operating expenditures are 44% of the budget. So with the lower operational spending, the water fund operating balance is above the policy target of 30 days. And then the sewer fund revenue is 48% of the budget estimate, and that's right on track. That's what we've seen, the same percentage last year, doing a year-over-year comparison. And operating expenses are 41% of the budget, and we've already made our debt payments. So that leaves the current fund balance right at the policy target level of 30 days of expenses. Looking at the stormwater fund, the revenue is 50% of the budget forecast, and expenses are 40% of the budget. The operating balance is above the policy target. Now, it's such a small fund. Looking at PW Admin, currently has a healthy cash balance, and operating expenses are 49% of the budget. So, as I mentioned earlier, the penny per gallon gas tax is down by 8%. Of the forecast, and it's 18% down in a year-over-year comparison. Looking at the hotel-motel tax, good news there, compared to 2015, it's 29% higher. So it's continued to trend upward, and there's every indication that those trends will continue, and I especially will anticipate that after the summer months. And then tax revenue from real estate sales, or REIT, is currently 21% higher compared to 2015. And looking at the trend, there is seasonality to this revenue, in that the majority of it is collected during the summer months, when homes typically sell. So through the third quarter, we'll see an increase there. And then property tax is coming in as estimated through the first half of the year. So are there any questions on the report itself? So moving to the 2016 mid-year budget amendment recommendation, you should have a sheet, two-page sheet in your packet. That lists out the items. The first one is the Strategic Economic Development Initiative. So initially we budgeted $50,000 for that project. To complete the project, we need another $50,000 for a total of $100,000. $20,000 has been committed from the Port of Bellingham grant. And the remaining $30,000 from the city's red funds. And keep in mind that we initially funded that project using red funds in the 2016 budget, the Rural Economic Development Funds. The next item is adjustment to city manager's salary, retro to May 1st, 2016. Then we have a neighborhood nuisance code cleanup. This would support volunteer efforts to operate small neighborhood cleanup events by paying for recycling and yard waste dumpsters. And then planning professional services. This would supplement planning's professional services with the Department of Commerce grant for the comp plan update. And then we have council chambers microphones. And I know that Bob, information technology person, has been testing. I think he tested today, and there was some testing last week, so it may not cost a full $20,000. Maybe it's $10,000, but we'd like to put a placeholder of $20,000 in the budget. New crash bar exit devices at the senior center. Council member Olson can probably attest to this, but they are in desperate need of replacement. And they're as old as the building, and they're very faulty. What's that?
They're not as old as you, Dennis.
The Marine Park Playground. So the initial budget was for incidentals. However, we had to pay the final contractor payment out of this year's budget. And it was due to delayed state approval of the final payment, Department of Labor and Industries delayed approval. Community Center Pavilion improvements. I believe these include, and the Public Works Director can provide further details, but is it parking improvements and then something to the interior?
Essentially regrading the grass area in the back to allow for vehicular access as well as a lawn, so it will be a structural lawn, so that trucks can back up and access the garage door.
Question, Bonnie?
I have a question, Raven. On the interior of the pavilion, when the big band was playing over there a couple weeks ago, the sound system is pretty atrocious. And I think it has to do partly because of acoustics. But I was talking to the sound technician, and he said with some not too very expensive modifications of surfaces, panels, this kind of thing, and if we hope to have like wedding receptions and, you know, people using it for those kind of events where music will be played, it was just really bad. And also there aren't enough outlets either. I don't know if anything could be done about that at this point, but I think the outlets are like 30 feet apart instead of 15 or something, which is normal, or maybe it was something less than that. I can't remember. But that was kind of a challenge to them, too, running a lot of extension cords, et cetera. So I don't know if we can allow for that in the budget or not, or look into that.
So we should try to do that within the scope of the money we have.
The scope of the money, you think?
Let's
okay.
Try it first before we...
Okay, that would be great.
So I think we budgeted a total of $20,000 for that the road improvement and then some of the interior items.
Okay, can we look into that then, Raven? Some modifications?
We will. I think it's going to be something that we're going to have to improve on over time. I don't know that we would be able to do the full sound baffling type of thing because it's a fairly big space. But we will do what we can with the money that we have, and I think we'll just keep budgeting a little bit each year to continue to improve it.
I don't know if the whole inside would have to be done in that way, maybe just around where the band is, to create kind of a, I don't know how those things work.
Yeah, but maybe get an acoustics person in to talk about it.
The band was on the south end of the building. That seems to be the most...
They brought all their
logical
speakers.
Yeah, they had all of that, you know, and they had some risers and that sort of thing, but it was really pretty bad, the sound of it. So.
Yeah, thank you.
And then lastly, there's a couple of electric fund capital items. There's a lighting project for Mitchell Avenue and then the purchase of an air compressor for the new Public Works building. Are there any questions on these recommendations, and does council have any other items that would like to be considered?
Jeff, the total funding then on the Strategic Economic Development Initiative is $100,000.
To complete the project.
Correct. And the city is paying $80,000 of that, is that what I'm understanding?
Yes.
Okay.
Any
So do we have to vote on these next time?
The question has been raised. Do we vote on these the next time?
Yes, this will be presented as a budget amendment at the next council meeting.
So if you have any comments or questions or additional items, please let us know.
Okay. Next is Community Development Services.
So we'll have a complete mid-year report probably at the next council meeting. I do have some preliminary numbers to give you a sense of development activity. And this is one of the reasons why we'll have real numbers for you in another couple of weeks or maybe a month. This year, we have 51 residential units applied for before June 30th, our mid-year cutoff. And last year, that number was 15, so 51 compared to 15. It's kind of busy. And in fact, we're on track with the way numbers are going, given that we've already received a whole bunch in July. That will likely be the busiest year since 2006. In 2006, we had 96 residential units that were applied for and issued. And ironically, 18 of those units are the third building at Marin, which were also applied for in June of this year. So that number of 96 was artificially high and now is being rebuilt, if you will, now. So we're seeing a really big uptick in that. In fact, for administrative permits, things like short plats and site plan reviews, land disturbance permits, last year we had 3 in the first half of the year. This year it looks like we have about 30 in the first half of the year. So significant change in development activity. And thank goodness that we have Maddie, and it's been great actually to have the new employee over Public Works, Ben, has been doing a great job as well. So between kind of the 5 of us, Raven, Ben, Alex, Maddie, and I, we've been able to keep that rolling, but it's been busy, really busy. In regards to staffing and people, I also wanted to announce that we have hired and made an offer to a building official. I don't think I told you that last time. And his name is Tim Woodard. Tim will be here August 15th, will be his first day. And he's spent the last 10 years working for the city of Boise. He did a few years before that in other cities in the, I think that's called the Treasure Valley, if I'm not mistaken, in the Nampa, Meridian, Boise area. And we're very excited to have him. It seems like he'll be a great addition to our staff. And as I said, August 15th, he'll be on staff. So that's really great. I have a little PowerPoint wanted to run through with you to give you kind of a debriefing on Chalk It Up, which was our first small downtown event that staff. So as I think you know, we, as department heads, administrative staff, we applied for a small grant from BTAC to put together some other events and see if we could add some extra energy into downtown and into the community, kind of modeled on Splash Days last year, which wasn't big, wasn't expensive, but it brought a lot of people into the town. Chalk It Up was a chalk art festival where we had a community wall mural that was created. This is what it looks like in the beginning. In addition to that, we had artists doing sidewalk chalk. So throughout the day, we had literally over 100 people come down and color with our host artists there that we hired to put together the mural, Brian and Diane Major. And that's the mural when it was almost 100% finished right there. And it was a really cool thing to see people, kids of all ages, as they say, come down and put that together. And at the same time, we had people doing sidewalk chalk art, and that was pretty fun to watch people do it and to do it as well. Some volunteers counting folks and doing a survey. We estimate that we had about 215 participants, and about a third of those were from out of town. I don't think many people came just to do the Chalk Art Festival, but we had a significant number of people that were from beyond the 50-mile radius, which is the BTAC measure. and all sorts of people coming down and watching what was happening. We even had a strolling musician come through just by luck. She showed up, phenomenally talented. There's one of the finished products, and here are some of the others. And that art will stay on the sidewalk until nature wears it away and feet walk it away, which, given the weather, should be at least a couple of weeks. Pretty fun event, and we hope to do it again next year, make it a little bit bigger. We have found our learning experience was artists are a very fickle group and have been tough to coordinate with. Not the ones who did the mural, they were fantastic, but getting people to come and do the sidewalk art was a little bit more challenging. But we made some great contacts during the event, and I'm sure it will work out next year that we do it again. And that was lots of fun. So that's that.
Thank you, Michael.
Michael, I have a question. Yeah. I know you people were required to register ahead of time and to submit a sketch, I believe, of what they wanted to do. Can there be any room for late Lucy's that come by and they say, you know, I'd like to do this? You provided the chalk, right?
We did, yeah.
Yeah. And if they told you what they had in mind, I mean, can you allow for that? Or
potentially, what we will be doing, the logistics of planning for an unknown number of people is challenging.
Right.
That's the biggest issue there. And then also the chalk that is used is not your regular kids 259 sidewalk chalk. This is stuff that costs about $3 a bar for a piece of chalk that's about the size of a small stick of butter. Because you get that's how you get the vibrant color. If you go down and look, you'll see it's really pretty intense. So planning for that is a challenge as well. You don't want to buy tons and then not use it. On the other hand, it doesn't go bad, so you could use it again.
Yeah.
So what we're thinking next year is we will probably target a certain number of artist spaces and a certain number of like amateur artist spaces. Mm-hmm. And then if they're full on come the day of the event, they're full. If there's still sign-ups available on the day of the event, we would probably let people do that. But we are thinking of limiting it to like 10 and 10 just simply because of the logistics of the size. And at a certain point, the chalk becomes a pollutant to be concerned about because it's all non-toxic, but it's still sediment and it's not natural stuff. And so if you put tons and tons of it down, it potentially becomes something of an issue. So we can't have it become endlessly large. We did have kids, younger kids, that just wanted to participate and just wanted to do it on the sidewalk. And we made arrangements for that, figured out how to do that, and we have a plan for next year to kind of have like a kids' corral where they can, you know, do their own. But
I guess that's what I was asking, a certain amount of spontaneity to be allowed. When people see the event going on, it generates a little bit of excitement. If they want to get involved, if there was a way.
Well, the whole mural part was
that's not true.
A pre-registration, so anyone could participate.
Yeah.
There was no turn.
Yeah.
No one was turned away.
Yeah.
It was just a matter of the sidewalk squares and having enough space laid out and all of that kind of thing.
Yeah, right. Okay. That's great.
Are we going to do the water thing for the kids again this year?
August. I meant to mention that. August 5th and 12th.
No,
from 1
August 5th and
12th.
Terrific.
Fridays.
Terrific. Harry? Yes, Dennis. Drayton Harbor Days are coming up the 6th, aren't they? Is that the date?
I think that's the date, yes.
See, I'd get hammered if I don't mention this. They're serving breakfast at the center. On the 6th.
On the 6th.
Okay. So, okay, next item is public safety. Chief, do you have anything that you wish to provide?
No formal report, Your Honor, just statistics, we're just a shade over 2,000 reports so far this year, which is a couple of percentage points above last year, year to date. We continue to get hammered with burglaries and vehicle prowls. We're losing average loss in burglary right now. It's running between $4,000 and $6,000. The reason the train blocked Hughes Avenue on Sunday was one of the knuckles broke between two of the cars. It was mechanical as opposed to a Bacchus issue, and they were able to, as Renata mentioned, they were able to clear the Bell Road intersection, but it did leave the Hughes Avenue intersection blocked. And any questions I can answer?
Okay.
Chief, so there's been an increase in burglaries and property crimes, and the dollar amount is increasing as well. Is that what you said?
These are well-executed burglaries. They're not opportunistic crimes.
Are they drug-related? Are we having an increase in a meth problem, or do you think there's that sort of issue going on?
Well, we have our share of drug offenses, the community does. I wouldn't orient it specifically to meth. We have all of our agencies are suffering an opioid increase problem, such that a couple of weeks ago we trained up all of our officers in to carry and deliver naloxone, Narcan, to help with overdose problems.
Mm-hmm.
Lower Mainland, BC, specifically Victoria, because they don't have injection sites available. They have well over 300 overdose fatalities so far this year.
Wow.
Talking with our local heroin addicts, primarily, they say we have two or three here in our area in the last few months. So we're taking steps to attempt to assist in those areas, both in terms of emergency service delivery and crime reduction. But I couldn't say, because of the way some of these recent burglaries have been planned and executed, it's not an opportunistic sort of thing. You see that more often with vehicle prowls. You leave your vehicle unlocked and valuables that you can see in the front or back seat, and you may have done that every day for years, and one morning you're going to come out and it was your turn. So that's more of the sort of thing we usually see with the drug addiction problems.
But these are a little more professional lately?
Pretty well done.
Mm-hmm.
Mike, do you think that some of these phone calls that you get that are hang-ups are checking to see whether people are home?
You get hang-ups, you get folks knocking on the doors, you get real estate signs in the neighborhood. There are a variety of tactics that they use in making sure the scene or the home is safe for intrusion. It could be, Dennis, I can't speak to a specific incident where we knew that happened beforehand in this most recent rash, but that is a common tactic.
Yeah, and I know this happened in Seattle, that they watched the homes where somebody was transported by ambulance, and they just broke into the house after everybody gone.
We have had occasions in the past where a family or a person is mentioned in an obituary, and shortly afterwards the residents will be burglarized. That hasn't happened in the last few months, but it has happened on occasion.
People need to be aware.
Is burglary going up in the whole county, like Ferndale?
Well, in our area, we are having an increase lately, and that includes both, not just inside Blaine, but outside of our companion area as well.
Birch Bay is counting the same problem.
Birch Bay, Birch Point, east of town, yes.
Is our percentages higher than what Linden and Ferndale are encountering?
I would have to look that up to answer the question, sir.
Snohomish is just having an epidemic, aren't they?
The further south you get, the more problematic your residential life becomes.
It's bad.
Any other questions, folks?
Thank you, Chief.
Okay, thank you.
Administrative services. I forgot you.
Jeff brought it up earlier that we're looking at the sound system. And one of the things that we're going to try that's less expensive is going to be replacing the bases and the mics that are in front of you. But it's very important to speak into the mic, and you could kind of tell when you're speaking into the mic because you hear that sound come through. like I could be speaking here, and now I can hear it, and you should all be able to hear that. And when we get the new mics in that we're going to start testing, you'll still need to lean forward and speak into the mics, and I just wanted to let you know so that people in the audience can hear and on the staff and other council members.
How are they going to be better then?
Well, some of the mics, in the bottom of your mic there where it fits into the base, that's actually the microphone area right there, and some of those are going out. And at the top where you're speaking into it, that area is blowing out also, we think. And then, while we were testing microphones today, we found out that the microphone that Councilmember Greeno usually uses, that the bass was totally gone, so it didn't work at all.
Well, just so they're better. And, I mean, we still have to talk into them.
Well, the thing is that you have to have be close enough to the mic to be heard. So if you're sitting back in your seat, it makes it very difficult for people to hear. We talked about the lavaliers, but those are very expensive, you know, to wear on your lapel. And, you know, that could run between $20,000 and $25,000. But if you're leaning in forward enough to speak into your mic, like tonight, for the most part, I think most people were heard. What does the audience think? Yes? Okay. So it's just a matter of practicing that. Mm-hmm. But we are doing what we can to help out with the sound.
Sherry, this isn't going to affect the system for hearing aids.
No, you're talking about the copper wiring that needs to go around, and that is a very good question. I need to check and see where we are with that. There is some up at the dais there, so that
it works.
Yeah, which is good. But eventually we would like to see it throughout the council chambers itself.
Thank
you,
Sherry.
Any other questions? Thank you.
Mr. City Manager.
Good evening. I just have a few things to talk about. First off, the surveys are out. 58 residents have already gone online with the Survey Monkey and started filling theirs out. You should do the same. Encourage your friends and neighbors and anybody else to do that. We're going to continue to tell people to fill the surveys out and encourage them to do so. You can find a link on our city webpage, and we encourage you to do that. We've had 5 library responses. We have cards at the library. People can pick the cards up, take them home, and go online. We also have visitor surveys that have been set out throughout the different places within the community. Same thing, a card, you pick it up, that gives you the address to go to fill out. So we're starting to get the feedback. I think the plan now is I'm going to just try to organize a meeting on August 15th with the City Council. You know, that's the second Monday in the month, which is the third. It's an off Wednesday or Monday, and we're going to try to have the City Council and any others that have participated in the work that we've done so far to get feedback from Beckwith on what the surveys are showing. So we'll get that information to you within the next day or so. So right now we're looking at mid-month to get some information back to the community and to the City Council in particular.
So Dave, the Survey Monkeys that you said are out there now, how are people getting those? Is that being emailed? Is it just on the website?
We've been doing various things to get people to know about that. We've advertised it. It's on our webpage. I think we've been using social media. We're going to continue to include that in the Northern Light and all the other outlets that we have to encourage people to do that.
Can we send it out to our... don't we have an email contact list for informational purposes?
We do have the ability to email out to people through those who are on Notify Me with the website. And we'd have to discuss how we want to do that so we make sure that the methodology is correct on that. But We could do that, and then, of course, as mentioned, the postcards, and we're going to order more postcards just to sit around, like, on counters at City Hall and other places so that people can pick them up, see that, and know that they can go online.
So postcards were mailed to every resident in the city.
The thing with the email, though, is it's so handy. Because you open the email, and the link is right there. You're at your computer right then and there. You click on the link, and you do the survey. And that's why I love the email idea. As many as we can get out there via email, gets it right in their mail slot.
Right.
You know, so.
Good suggestion.
Do we do Twitter or Facebook?
We have both of those social media outlets.
Yes, and that was put on Facebook by Sam last week.
So, Dave, if somebody wanted to pick up a hard copy of these to fill out,
is they can there a... come, go ahead. They can come to City Hall and get a copy.
Okay.
Library, too, I believe. We'll call, we'll fax them, scan them. We'll do what we can to get the information out. So it's going to take a couple of 2 or 3, 4 weeks. But you know, since it's been out just recently, we've got 58 responses from local residents. So we're looking for more of those, of course.
When were the cards sent out?
Sam?
I think they're mailed off Friday.
And what was that mail list? Who?
Every resident, every household in the city.
Oh, okay. That's good.
Maybe and the cards to the library were delivered today with the hard copies of the surveys also that people are filling out at the library.
Maybe a letter to the editor.
Mm-hmm. That encouraged people to fill them out.
Yeah.
Also, we crafted a letter for Dana Hanks. You know, she's been the director of the senior program for many years and is retiring on Friday. I won't be here on Friday, but I think, Mr. Olson, are you going to be here Friday?
I don't know.
Well, the reason I'm asking is you are the senior program liaison.
But we're planning on being there.
We've got a letter that we want the council to sign tonight before you leave, and we'd like someone on the council to deliver that letter to Dana. There's going to be a ceremony, and I think the city needs to thank her for her service. And this letter serves in that purpose for you to sign. And would encourage all council members who are going to be here on Friday to attend that. It's going to be a nice gathering and recognition for her. There's going to be cake and punch and probably lots of stories.
Can we do a certificate of appreciation also, something that is frameable?
Sure.
For her? Mm-hmm. Debbie usually does such a good job with those, mm-hmm. So that would be great, too,
yes.
Signed by Harry.
Yeah.
Dennis, is this a luncheon?
Yep.
There's lunch. There's lunch, but is it a luncheon for her or is it just regular lunch?
I think it's just regular lunch and then they're going to have cake, whatever, afterwards.
Okay. That'll start around 1 o'clock.
Yeah, she has to work the whole time.
Yeah, they have selected a new director, and that person is starting in August. So they're excited about the new person coming on board. I mentioned the joint meeting August 15th. We'll get that information more specifically to you later this week. I'm out of the office this Thursday through next Tuesday. I'm going to be down and visiting my family in Nevada. Jeff's going to be acting city manager. And then last, I want to comment on the train. So this train stopping is a problem throughout Puget Sound. If you live in Edmonds, if you lived in Kingston, and you use the ferry, when the train stops in Kingston, it holds the ferry offshore up to 30 minutes, 45 minutes. So the Department of Transportation from the state of Washington has a similar situation with it. That train has a priority crossing. So it's important, I think, to recognize this is a larger problem than the city of Blaine. Blaine's probably the only city that has a Bacchus, which gives us a little bit more of an edge. I've been watching this now for 3 years. We've been polite. We've been good citizens. We've been kind of complaining at a pretty nice level. I was going to say gentlemanly-like, but I don't want to be sexist in that remark. We've been very... very nice about our requests, and all that's great. The fact is, it's well known. All the folks that need to know about Bacchus know about it. My recommendation is that if the council wants, you step it up. We could come back with a resolution that the council approves that, you know, really kind of speaks more into the terms of demanding some type of change or response to the needs of the community. We take that resolution to the fire district board of directors. We take it to this county council. We take it to any person within the county or entity that's affected by it. Then you start just marching it all the way up the political lines to, you know, finally go to the state and start talking to them. The more attention you put on this, the more the media will start to pick up on it. And maybe it's a Connie Thompson interview that sparks some kind of a regional news report that eventually gets on ABC, NBC News, or something like that. When that starts to happen, people will start paying attention. Right now, there's, you know, trains are stopping all up and down Puget Sound rail system. It's an inconvenience. It's a public safety problem. But in the sense of that issue, we're not any different than anybody else, except for the Bacchus, which is potentially being moved. Everything else is going to be the same. You know, the trains are stopping, they're going. That's going to be the same. The other thing, we did talk with one of the operators, one of the managers, about those trains stopping in an intersection. And his comment was, dial the 800 number, report the intersection you're at. The operators down in Texas can see that train. Now, what they'll do, whether it's realistic or possible, you know, those trains are up to a mile long, and someone who's in the engine of that train has to get out and walk a mile back, but they can't unhook a train at that crossing. So in a situation where the train is stopped, maybe everybody who's affected by it in that community starts calling the 800 number. But I think you're going to have to raise the bar, being pleasant, being polite, having meetings, requesting change, requesting funding. Hasn't gotten the city anywhere for a decade. So I think that would be my suggestion, is raise the bar. And I think it has to start here. And if the council is interested in that level, then I would suggest we bring that forward. I think there could be a Facebook page dedicated to this, as well as some social media. So anybody affected by it could then have a connection to at least an outlet for their frustrations. Right now, they come to City Hall like Ms. Thompson did tonight and just... they're frustrated when they're here, and she left frustrated, right? And you're frustrated. So at least this gives you at least another step forward. There's risk to that, of course. You're going to alienate people, make them mad. They're not going to support you. You're going to learn quickly whether the county council thinks this is a good idea or not. But I think if you want to do something, that's what my recommendation would be.
David, I've got...
You need to speak in the microphone.
Oh, David, three comments. One is, I think we should ask the local representatives of Murray and Cantwell to come here.
Okay.
Formal letter, say we would like to meet with you. We have an issue we want to discuss, and ask them to come. The senators won't come, but their representatives will. And the third item would be, I think we should consider a trip to Washington itself and try to meet with Murray, Cantwell, and Del Benny, and who's the other guy?
Larson.
And see if we can't arrange a meeting directly with them.
Okay.
I mean, if we really want to do something about this, I think we really got to go after it.
Gotta step it up.
And I think a trip to Washington, ask to meet with these people, if not them, then the people that they have working for them. And go with a presentation and maybe a short video on what if we can get somebody to time it so that the train stops and we can video it.
Yeah, you know, on a separate note but similar, I think Raven was the one that told me that the WSDOT folks were here looking at 274 and looking at the crossing, yeah. And happened to go across the tracks to Steamers to get a cup of coffee. Yeah. The train came and sat there for 45 minutes.
Yeah.
And so now the problem became very real to them.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, I think we need to do a lot, as much as we can, to get attention on the problem.
Yeah. And I just, you know, it's so frustrating for us because we've been after this. I mean, we've talked to everybody we can talk to, and I think the trick is the fact that it's Homeland Security, which kind of scares everybody to death.
But, I mean, we've got to find a way to get directly to these people and make them do something.
Well, I think Homeland Security, they would be happy to do it if they had the funding to do it.
Yeah, right.
They probably would actually improve technologies and do all kinds of things to make it a more usable facility, but they need funding to do that.
Have you heard back from Del Benny on your...
Not a word.
Not a word, eh?
And we saw them on Tuesday.
Yeah. So I think we need to just go after them.
All right. That's the end of my report. Any questions?
So I think we're done.
Okay, if there's any unfinished business, the council new business. Hearing none, I'll adjourn the meeting at 7:48.